I'm looking at my time. It's exactly 1400 hours, and this is our second meeting as a committee. But this time we are meeting the Department of Health. So,
Recording in progress.
Hello, Chair. I think we still have 3 minutes, is 13:57, if I'm correct. 13:57.
no, my time says
14,
1400.
1500.
It means the leader is always ahead.
So, do you mean I'm ahead of time?
Still 3 minutes too.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, let me give some 2.5 minutes to start. It's fine. Good morning, good afternoon, honorable members. The time is 1400 hours exactly that we supposed now to start our meeting. And let me welcome the Deputy Minister and the DG and your team to this meeting. As you remember all that the purpose of this meeting is to provide the department with an opportunity to interact with this committee to brief it as how the adjustment operation bill has affected the department and what could be the challenged areas in as far as their planning is concerned to implement and effect the budget. So what we will do, we will provide or give the ministry or the deputy minister and your team about 45 minutes after you have made an overall a statement, deputy minister Joma, and thereafter the DG should then lead your team for the next 45 minutes, and the members of the committee will then be able to interact with your input. But first, before I go there, can I check with you, Darren, what are the apologies, or who has apologized?
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, members and guests. We've got apologies here from the minister who is outside the country on an official engagement. We also received an apology from Honorable Kwang Kwang, who is busy with another commitment, as well as Mr. Saripen, who is off sick. Thank you, Chair.
With those apologies accepted, we can then move to the next item on the agenda, which is the presentation by the department. But first, I would ask Dr. Shlomo to come in as the presentation will follow. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, and good afternoon to the honorable members and the DG and the team that we do lead. I hope I'm audible, Chair, if I may continue. Yes, indeed, our minister is out of the country on a SADC meeting in Luanda. And I also want to request, Honorable Chair, that after presenting and handing over to the DG, I'm also excused at the time of questions. I may not be able to be with you because the Deputy President is receiving a report from us, as he is going to be leading us on the World AIDS Day this coming Friday. So I'll still have to complete the work that we are doing in there. We are responding, Honorable Chairperson, to your invitation of coming in to present the socioeconomic and service delivery implications of the 1.6 billion budget reduction. And also, I know that the committee might be interested to know of the progress that we are making in the rolling out of the NHI. I also aware of some interest of some of the honorable members here to say, what are we doing with at least what we received? DG, I try to indicate that part that we may be expected to say, we are just one of those government departments that receive over 50 billion budget allocation. How much of locally procurement are we engaged in? And we will be expected to say how much we do. And I could actually say upfront, Chair, we may not be at the level where you may be happy with the progress that we are making on that space. But it may not be our own areas only. It may have to be quite a whole host of other stakeholders to be assisting us in there, including other government departments. But I'll leave it at that for now and prepare my DG and the other DGs who are here joining us to say maybe when we come to that level, which is not probably going to be included in our slide presentation, we could be able to prepare a response to some of those issues that members might be interested. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And maybe if our DG is ready to start, I will now ask him to start the presentation. Honorable Shen.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister Dinangwe, Honorable Chair and members of the SADC Committee on Appropriations. I am joined by a team. We've got our CFO who will actually lead the presentation. Then we've got a number of DDGs, Dr. Mahlathi, Reverend Morewane.
Sorry, DG. We are a standing committee on appropriations, not select committee.
Oh, yes. My apologies, Chair. Yes, my apologies. The standing committee on appropriations. Once more, let me apologize for that slip of the tongue. I was introducing the team. I'm joined by DDG Dr. Mahlathi, DDG Ms. Hunter, I'm also joined by Acting DDG Reverend Morewane, and then the support team from my office, and also our parliamentary liaison officer. With the indulgence of the chair, I'd like to invite our CFO, Mr. Paswama Mohale, to lead the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, DG, and Honorable Chair. I will try to, may I request that the host enable me to share the presentation, please?
Yes, I'm conferring the rights to you now, now. Yes, you've been made a co-host, say. You may proceed. You can share the screen.
Yeah, thanks. Can we see the presentation? Yeah, thanks, Chair. I will proceed with the presentation as requested. On the invite, as it has been indicated, I'll go through the presentation, the slides, which doesn't exceed the 20 slides. So on the presentation or on the invitation, there was indication that we must indicate the service delivery implications on the budget cut of 1.6 and also the progress on rolling out the NHI scheme in the country and also any other useful information to the committee. So as we start with the next slide with regards to service delivery implications, Chair, here we indicate actually the total budget in terms of the reduction is 1.645 billion, as it has been indicated. So of the 1.6, 205 million is the funds that is coming from the National Department of Health voted funds, our indirect conditional grants, which is allocated within the National Department, and also the earmarked funding that we have. We also have a 1 billion reduction from HIV and AIDS conditional grant. For these funds, the 1 billion is the one that the department at the national level, it gets transferred to the provinces for the implementation of the programs in the provinces. We also have 140 million that has been reduced from health facility revitalization grant. Also, this grant is the money that gets transferred to the provinces with regards to implementation on the infrastructure. In terms of the processes, we also just want to indicate that all provinces were given the opportunity to adjust the business plans because there were changes in terms of the allocations, which it has ended on the 14th of November. And also, and that is a department, we have issued the internal containment, cost containment measures to manage the spending until the financial year end. And also, that is in line with the regulations which they have been issued by National Treasury. So in terms of the actual fund, Chair, you will see in terms of the whole allocation in the department, we had 60.1 billion. That was allocated to the national health. We also indicated the budget reduction in terms of the 1.645 billion on the third column in terms of the programs. And there is a self-funding funds of 84 million. So the 84 million was received as a self-funding from National Treasury with regards to the COVID-19 vaccination program. And then our adjusted or revised budget, it becomes 58.4 billion. And also at the bottom, we do indicate the same reduction in terms of the economic classification, where you'll see 30 million was coming from our compensation of employees. And also 99 million was coming from our goods and services. So those ones are the funds which are within the 205 million reduction, and with regards to 1 billion and 440, it's within the transfers of 1.5 billion. So this budget cut, as I've already indicated, so the reduction of 30 million on the compensation, it will affect the filling of critical posts in the department. And also the reduction of 99 million on goods and services, that is in line with the regulation, cost containment regulation issued by National Treasury, where we have reduced the budget with regards to catering, traveling, and subsistence, which it will affect the support to provinces and also strengthening the capacity building through the workshops. With regards to the transfers and subsidies, as I've already indicated, but we'll give more details as we continue on the 1 billion from comprehensive HIV and AIDS, and also 440 on the health facility revitalization grant. We also had about 72 million that has been reduced from the departmental agencies, which includes the agencies that we're having within the department. And of course, the 4 million reduction within the capital, that will just delay some of the procurement in terms of tools of trade for computers and office equipment within the national department. With regards to the billion reduction, the total allocation on the comprehensive HIV and AIDS, it was 23.9 billion. So the reduction of 1 billion, then it means the allocation goes down to 22.9 billion. We also indicated the reduction in terms of all the provinces. The budget cut, which was effected, it was within the HIV treatment program, which that's where we procure the drugs. So the ARV spending has declined due to the new contract with better rates, which it has seen this department having the savings of about 6.5 billion over the contract period. The contract period is 3 years. And the biggest proportion of this billion cut was taken from Gauteng and KZN. That's mainly because of their high allocation, because if you go to the previous slide, you'll see the allocation in those two provinces anyway, it's high. And also the reduction was in line with the caseload in the provinces. So some of those smaller provinces were protected from the cut to ensure continuity of service delivery. There is a cut, but we try to make sure that we caution those small provinces. So in terms of how are we going to mitigate this risk as a department, we also do indicate that the ARV consumption and spending by all provinces is going to be closely monitored, and also taking the point that there were better rates that we got on the current contracts. And also Global Fund is donating about 350 million worth of ARVs to the provinces, so that will cushion the same reduction within the program. And also a further 150 million could be made available from Global Fund on request by the national department. And also the spending on the MMC, condom, COE, and training could be slightly due to the cost containment, as I've already indicated. So some of the reduction in terms of traveling and subsistence within the program, as there is a reduction in the provinces, will also reduce the spending. So in terms of the health facility revitalization grant, we also indicate the total allocation to the provinces, which was 7.1 billion. We also indicated the allocation per each province. And in terms of the budget reduction, is the column that says adjustment. So that's 440 million that will be reduced. And we also indicated the revised or the adjusted allocation, which it goes down to 6.6 billion. So in terms of the projects in the provinces, as you'll see, we indicated the number of projects which are still within the design and tender stage in terms of each province, and the number is 230. So the reason to indicate this change is because we show this number of projects which will be affected by this budget cut in terms of each province. These are the projects which are reported to be still within the design or the tender stage. They call it the planning phase. So it means those projects which are still within the planning phase, we might delay in terms of the implementation, just based on the available or based on the budget cuts that will be affected in terms of each province. In terms of the progress on rolling out the NHI, we indicate that the bill was adopted by National Assembly in June 2023. And also in June, the National Department has presented the B bill to NCOP. And also the department, we have briefed to all 9 provinces in terms of all the legislatures, and that has been completed on the 20th of September 2023. And we continued with the public hearings in terms of all the provinces, which was conducted by NCOP, which was also concluded by the end of October. So the meeting of the Select Committee on Social Services of the NCOP for final provincial mandate negotiations on the bill took place on the 21st of November. Then in terms of continuing with the implementation or the progress on the NHI, we indicated the first phase priority focus area in terms of section 57 of the bill. We did indicate the NHI bill section 57, which it does list the following areas as a transitional arrangement for phase one. I think we have indicated all those on the slides, but I want to concentrate on the next slide, which talks about the summary progress on the section 57, which I've indicated in the previous slide. The execution of the implementation requires that the National Department of Health, Provincial Departments of Health, National Treasury, and Department of Public Service and Administration work together to implement the business plan. So this has commenced with the creation of the Interdepartmental Committee of DG's Director Generals. The Minister of Health, Public Service and Administration and Finance have agreed to the establishment of the branch within the department, within the national department, which that's where we were still busy with the recruitment of some of the posts which will assist the department. The transparency will include that every draft regulation and policy that is developed must be published in the Gazette for 3 months, together with the notice declaring the intention to make that regulation and inviting interested persons to furnish their comments thereon or any representations they may wish to make in regards thereto. And also the good progress made with drafting of governance regulation that substantively prepares for section 12 to section 30 proclamation once the bill becomes an act. And also the department has commenced work on transition of the administration and through the section 7A of the Public Service Act. In terms of the first step, as we have indicated, so that then the entity can be established as a Section 3A entity. In terms of the summary of the current initiatives, also that the draft model for capitation has been developed and the process of consultation with stakeholders has commenced, that has already started. And also a draft framework for primary health care benefit package has been developed and presented to National Health Council. So the framework is currently being finalized and being consulted with stakeholders. And the phase one of the primary health care benefits to be covered, NHI, and has been drafted and coded to harmonize public sector primary health care package and private GP service packages. The second last slide, that the first phase of the geospatial model to determine the boundaries of contracting a unit for PHC, which is called CAPS, it has also been developed. And also once contracting or once these CAPS has been identified in each province, So a digital health system profile for each of the identified 9 CAPS, it means in the provinces, developed, and also the 5 provinces have already commenced or started with the data collection, analyzing, and consultation with the provider. So the process of the costing of the PHC packages and the viable pricing has also started. So that has already been done. So in terms of just the other information, Honorable Chair, we also just want to indicate, I think it was also indicated in terms of the medium budget speech, that the South African Law Reform Commission is finalizing report on legal reform to manage the medical legal claims, which constitute a significant financial risk, because as a sector, we're having a huge amount of medical legals. So as per the discussions with the senior officials from National Treasury after the budget speech, they've indicated, I think in the budget speech, there is an indication that 17.5 billion will be allocated to health and education in terms of the wage bill increase. Just also indicated this 6.8 billion that we says it will be allocated to the health sector, Chair, this money will be allocated in the provinces to cover the shortfall in terms of the wage bill on the increases that we had. Also that the health sector, also as a sector, we have started some of the activities to improve the efficiencies in a couple of areas. Some of those includes the overtime payment, the medical supplies and security services, and also to delay some of those infrastructure projects, as I've already indicated in the previous slides, to make sure that we don't have an overspending. In terms of the recommendation, it's recommended that the committee knows the budget reduction of 1.6 for the National Department of Health, and also the impact that it will have to the service delivery. So that was the thanks lines. Thanks, DG and Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, CFO. Would like to hand back to the chair. That's the presentation we prepared, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DG and your team. I hope members have been listening and taking notes on the issues that the department has raised. What I'm going to do, I'm going to take hands, or I see the hands of the chairperson. Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the Deputy Minister Dlomo and DG Sheng for the presentation, and the CFO. Thank you very much. And we appreciate the presentation. I thought, let me come while I'm struggling with my connectivity where I am. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. No. Here's the question. We all know that the fact that in the adjustments we're dealing with reprioritization and cuts is because of under collection by the receiver. And that comes from the economy, which is not growing at the required rate. So we have said that the current interventions, they are temporary, they can't be permanent, they are not sustainable. The solution to this is to get our economy growing. A project that all of us, private and public sector, government departments, must work towards. So the question is, I'm looking at growing the economy. Can the department share with the committee now or in the future the big items that the health departments or the health aid, both national and provinces, procure? And which of those are nationally manufactured or produced, and which are the ones imported? Please also indicate amount spent on imports. Number two related to this. How can the health departments turn around imports to locally produced goods? It's a simple thing that every item that we import, we must know that that's tantamount to exporting growth to those countries, exporting employment to those countries, exporting revenue to those countries. So in the ERP, we talk about inclusive growth and local and localization. So we are then asking those items which are are imported, and when do we hope to turn those into locally produced goods? Related to that questions, are there any impediments, and how does the department intend to deal with those hurdles in locally producing their goods? Thank you, Chairperson. I hope the DM and the DG and CFO and everybody was able to follow me. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me note further the hands here. The next hand would be Honorable Thandi Tobias, followed by Honorable Matafa, and followed by Honorable Mlenza. In that order, please, members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first apologize for the noise. I'm on the road to the Free State Province. First, let me welcome the presentation. And let me also start with a comment that the NHI should move from a transitional arrangement to now a point of implementation, because the bill has been cut vast widely, and the NCOP has conducted public hearings in provinces that have been successful. And indeed, I need to commend the department for that steady work it has done. But the first one is the worry I must register in the cutting of funding for ARVs, as they are playing a major role in provinces, making sure that our people remain healthy and are provided with those important tablets. Something is to take for us to be able to ensure that we allocate enough funds for it. The third point I wanted to make is that it's a quagmire to want to cut budgets for wages on special occupations, and I want to repeat this. It's unfortunate to cut budgets on special occupations, especially in the health sector, because the role that nurses and doctors play is to secure lives. It's often but not, they find themselves working extraordinary hours to attend to patients, especially in far-flung rural areas. And also, it would be unfortunate to cut spending on infrastructure development, because we don't have enough beds and hospitals in the country to take care of the sick. So I know this is a temporary measure, it's a cost containment measure, as the chairperson has indicated, but perhaps we could have cut on consultation. And I'm not, it's not my role to tell a department where to cut or it can suggest how it should take shape. But I'm saying, where we need to invest more of our resources, and in this instance, in the special occupations, we should do that. We should compensate properly those nurses and doctors who spend hours taking care of the sick. But we must also have enough infrastructure. People must not sleep on the floor in hospitals or wait in the waiting rooms to be attended to. So can we have an indication that the projects should be cut? I saw that for instance, and the Northern Cape, only one project will be affected, but in other provinces, we have as big as 117 and 59 projects going to be affected by cuts. Can we indicate what type of projects will be affected so that we can have a sense of that not essential services will be affected? Let me pause the chair. Chair, I have heard the sir.
Okay, you are done. Thank you very much, Honorable Tobias. Comrade Honorable Oscar, may you come in, please?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to your good self, to the Deputy Minister, Honorable Dlomo, and the team, the colleagues. Thank you for the presentation. We really appreciate it, and it's giving clarity to the developments around the cost containment measures. I just have a few questions that I just need maybe the department to reflect on. And the first one, it's on the issue of the NHI, which is a universal basic health care. Now, my question there would be, in the full implementation or towards its full implementation, are we geared in terms of the skills that we have in the department that will be able to fulfill the duties that are required in the NHI when it's fully implemented? I'm asking this question, Chair, because I remember there was a moratorium that was placed in the filling of vacancies. Maybe in the response, the department can just indicate how does that moratorium impact on the capacitation of the roles that are required in the NHI process. Chair, Honorable Tobias touched on the issue of ARVs and its rollout. We note the presentation that the full coverage is not where we desire it to be, as much as a small gap, 2.3 odd million individuals. I personally would have heard on the radio the advertisements by the Department of Health speaking specifically on the benefits of using ARVs and not defaulting. My question is, have the department seen any improvement in that particular campaign that I have heard in the radio? And if not, what other measures is the department considering to ensure that the individuals that require ARVs are covered, and when they are covered, they do not default on their treatment? The last one, Chair, is just on the infrastructure. Again, Honorable Tobias spoke to that, but I think maybe it should come as a question to say the current infrastructure, is it conducive for the full implementation of NHI? If not, what are plans to ensure that we reach that stage within the cost containment era that we find ourselves? I will pause there, Chair. Those are the questions that I have, and I really appreciate the time for participating in the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Oscar. Honorable Mlenza, can you come in?
Yes. Thanks, Chairperson of the session, and greetings to the leadership of the Department of Health, as led, of course, by the DM. And the DG colleagues, good afternoon. Mine, Chair, would be only one question, not many. Because some of the questions that I had have been touched. Even this one, to some extent, Honorable Topias has touched, but I felt that I should just put something like more emphasis on infrastructure investment. We have been talking NHI, but my interest would be, what is the current estimated cost of infrastructure investment required in order to get healthcare facilities in general in a state of readiness for infrastructure implementation or on NHI. My question, Chair, is derived from the fact that you have, for instance, patients from Matatia. This is two-pronged, Chairperson. patients from Matatiel, which is bordering KZN and Eastern Cape, which is my constituency, of course, would be traveling for about 500 kilometers or so to East London, where they would be, say, for instance, if they wanted to access specialist services like cancer and all, you know. Why? Because I said this question is two-pronged, Chair, because by virtue of Matatiel being in the Eastern Cape, the department is unfortunately only one-directional. It does not apply its mind in terms of proximity to resources. So a person can rather die because he or she belongs to the Eastern Cape and then has to go the East London route instead of going to Durban, which is less than 300 kilometers from Matatiel. So now I would then ask, what is the direct impact on the South African citizens of the delay in infrastructure projects and the reprioritization of health facility, the health facility revitalization grant? Now, this one, Chair, also, I am not naive of the fact that there is a hospital in Tabankulu, Alfred Nzo, which would be all-encompassing and be the center as required, wherein we would see all NHI-related activities taking place at CPA2. But now, is that not affected by reprioritization? If yes, how much? What mechanisms will the department put in place to ensure that the delayed infrastructure projects do not result in exacerbating inequitable access to healthcare? This is what I'm raising, Chair. Then the last one, also related to this, is over the short to medium term, how will the department prioritize infrastructure projects in general to mitigate a deterioration in the quality of healthcare service provision for patients? If you notice, Chair, this revolves around infrastructure development for maintenance and uplifting the standards of the healthcare facilities, so that we realize a ukuphila kwabantu baseMzantsi Afrika. Thanks, Chairperson.
Well, thank you very much, members. Let me check whether are there any follow-up questions that you might like to raise before we give the department to respond, honorable members.
Much for now, Chair.
So, honorable Tanti Tobias.
I said not for now, Chair. I'm fine for now.
Okay. All right. So, now, if there's
covered, Chair.
Yes, who's
covered? Speaking? Utilize covered.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Let me then come to, before I give the DG and your team, because the deputy minister has already apologized that he won't be able to be with the team because of the commitment with the program of the deputy president, forcing the department to become part of the program. So, let me come to this one, DG and your team. You know, sometimes when you talk about the patient who has been injured, and then you say let us cut another vein so that he can get healed. So for me, that approach, it doesn't assist. As my own other honorable members have raised their issues, critical issues around this budget reprioritization. So what I also want to check from the department, was it consulted by Treasury, engaged, and have a common consensus around the issues that you are supposed to reprioritize in as far as your budget is concerned? Now, I want to link the issue of NHI, of which honorable members, honorable Tobias and honorable Oscar have raised, DG, and the issue of the prevalence of HIV and AIDS in the country. I don't just want to read what the media was saying around particular provinces where prevalences of HIV and AIDS has actually escalated. So, and then you then come about a bullet point there which says, you know, this is going to affect the distribution of condoms and medical male circumcision programs. And also, like I'm saying, you read in the media, no, there are particular provinces whereby a prevalence of HIV and AIDS has escalated. Now, it doesn't make sense for me then to say, let us reduce, therefore, a budget that will deal with the prevention of HIV and AIDS measures such as condoms. So that's where I'm saying, I'm bringing in the issue of, or the analogy of a bleeding patient, and then you say to correct it is to cut another vein of blood. So it means you are complicating it. So I also want to know, why is there particular challenge with regard to those mentioned provinces? I'm not sure is Western Cape, Free State, and KZN, and what else. But there is that those provinces where HIV and AIDS prevalence is escalating. And then, thirdly, is on the issue of the pharmaceutical company. I know it would be a state entity at the end of the day, but doesn't the department has interest in as far as this is concerned? I'll tell you why I'm talking about this, because the price of medicine has escalated, you know, over the past period under review, to an extent that now, while struggling to implement fully the NHI scheme or policy, then the poor continue to suffer under high price of medication and rely on private assistance. So isn't the department interested in, as far as you know, establishment of this company, and at least it will be in a position to mitigate the issues of prices and link well with the implementation of national health insurance policy? Then I would really agree with what Honorable Tobias has raised. With regard to the issues around wage and OSD related matter. Because if you would remember the history of the implementation of that particular aspect, it had, you know, there were a number of problems, actually it brought about some challenges in the national department, in a sense that you'd find a rare skills would not be attracted to be in a particular position outside, you know, the city. Because of the challenges which were associated with the OSD. So as soon as there's a tempering with that, Surely the department might experience a number of problems. I don't know how the department is going to deal with that, if it may complicate, because it has a potential to complicate once we talk about that issue, especially the highly skilled skill that you need, especially in rural areas. So maybe let me pause at that stage and allow the department to take us through on a number of discussion that the members have raised. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the honorable members for engaging on the presentation. I will start, and then I'm going to allocate the relevant colleagues to respond to specific questions. I think in general, there was a good question on procurement, especially the big items. I will actually try and deal with that at a high level, and then allow the CFO, and I also see that our head of supply chain is here with us. Our main items in terms of procurement, which are high value, medicines is one of them, and I'm happy that the chair also touched on it. One question that I want to raise, and I'll make an example, is that local procurement does not necessarily translate to low price. We had to deal with a very difficult matter with the team that led to the ministers appointing the committee of DGs to look into these matters. When we're procuring the vaccines, we know most of our vaccines are actually procured in South Africa by procured from a company that is partly owned by government through Department of Science and Innovation. But when we went through the procurement process, if we procured from that local company, we're going to pay more than a billion more than procuring from outside of the country. I think the overarching issue here is that the honorable members here are the legislators. They set up the laws and the policies. And our jobs as accounting officers is to implement those. And if we don't implement those to the core, we normally find ourselves in conflict with the law and with the SIU knocking on the door. That's what I actually told the ministers. I said, ministers, you guys set up the laws. I'm therefore happy that there is a procurement bill that will probably allow for some flexibility, because currently sometimes it's very difficult based on value for money and on some other parameters that we use in procurement. But we do actually strive to procure locally, and there is a premium that we are willing to pay, which is Treasury guides us on that, so that we give. But sometimes it becomes really, even if you're willing to pay that premium, it goes beyond that. So it's that, and it's also on medical equipment. But also on medicine, one thing that I just want to raise is that in medicine, what you normally pay for, instead, it's about 72% is what we call the APIs, or the active pharmaceutical ingredient. And there is none registered in South Africa. So for whatever medicine that you buy, the premium actually is going outside, because most of the APIs that go into the medicines are actually all foreign, either in India, in China, in the UK, or in Belgium and the different countries. So that is the first issue. Until we are able to have APIs, we will only be doing what we call finish and filling. They still bring in the product, like you would have seen some of the companies with the vaccines, and then all you do is to fill and fill, but the actual 72% of that is still going out because we have to get the APIs. It's the similar issue with the medical equipment, which is another high-cost items in terms of the licenses. We'll find that the major companies that that actually make a lot of this equipment, for example, I'll talk about like the equipment that you use for cancer, which cost up to 50 million. You'll find that most of it, again, the licenses are held by the foreign companies. They then appoint a local company as a distributor and give them the rights to distribute. So there's a lot of work. And on our side, I think it's work that's beyond health. The Department of DTIC, which is the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, should actually be coming in. One of the reasons why most of the Indian companies actually, even the vaccine that we bought is of origin in India, what you discover is that their own government deliberately invests in their local companies so that they are able then to compete even in international markets. So hence then our ministers actually put together a committee that is led by the DG of Science and Innovation, Dr. Philip Joaha. I am the member of that committee, and then the Treasury is a member of the of that committee. I think the last one, I've just forgotten, but there were four departments that have been tasked on actually coming up with a strategy, hoping that the new procurement bill, if it becomes law, it will allow for more flexibility for us to support local production and then buying from the local companies. And then on the issue, on the next one that I wanted to touch on before I hand over to my colleagues, is the issue on HIV in general. Yesterday, we attended the launch of what is called the HIV survey that is done, which is done by the Human Sciences Research Council. And for me, that is the most objective way of evaluating our response to HIV as a country. To see if we are actually getting the return on investment. And I must say, we're actually very happy that from that survey, it was actually reported that the HIV prevalence has actually dropped. The last one was done in 2017 and it's now in 2022. And we were previously at a total number of 7.9 million people living with HIV in the country. That has now decreased to 7.8 million in the country. What is also very nice for us is that South Africa is closer to achieving what we call 95-95-95 targets, meaning that 95% of people are HIV positive should know their status, 95% of those people should be on treatment, and 95% of those on treatment should be virally suppressed. Then we'll be able to reach what we call epidemic control. Now, in terms of this 95, 95, 95, in terms of this survey, South Africa is 91. It's actually 90%, 91%, and 94%. That's 90, 91, 94. We're still short of the target, but there's a huge improvement for the country in terms of moving forward and getting all those people on treatment. So we are happy, but we have actually started a very targeted program now to actually look for these other missing people that we need to be putting on treatment. We've identified 100 facilities that carry the bulk of these people. And what we are then doing is actually having a project management approach in getting these people so that we put them on treatment. We are aiming to actually get almost a million extra by the end of the financial year. My team promised me when I said, are you guys sure? They said, yes, we are looking and we are doing active case finding for people, but also using index patients to get a hold of these people on the ART program. On the issue of the ARVs, as much as we have lost a billion in terms of the cutting, I must say, as the CFO mentioned, this money was also an underspending based on the fact that our procurement team on the pharmaceuticals did a very good job in negotiating for lower prices. But also the newer regimens that we're now implementing, which is what is called, we call it DLT or dolutegravir-based regimen, is much cheaper. And from what we had allocated, we're able to save quite a lot. Actually, it's more than 6 billion over the contract period, which is 3 years. So we made sure that we're not going to run out of ARVs, but also we do have a second option where the Global Fund will actually be is giving us extra money for what we call the buffer stock, which we keep centrally, so that if any province runs into problems, we are able to supply them and give them this, ensure that they don't run out of antiretroviral treatment. In terms of circumcision and the condoms, again, we're working very hard to ensure that we don't run out of those. We do have buffer stocks that we keep at national to support the provinces. But in addition to that, our funders, which is PEPFAR, for example, even when it comes to a medical male circumcision, they do actually fund those programs and appoint implementing partners to assist us so that we're not 100% dependent on the appropriated money to be able to reach these targets, to ensure that there is a good reach in terms of there is a good reach in terms of the in terms of these programs. The last one that I will deal with is the moratorium on the post and the skills required for the implementation of the NHI. I must say, Professor Chris will come in later to just deal with the specifics, but we do have, we have created a number of posts trying to get the right skills that we look for in the NHI, where we're bringing in health economists, we're bringing in public health specialists, we're bringing in people who are good in data systems, digital health specialists. A number of them have been appointed. Others are in the process of being appointed. As much as there is a moratorium, however, the directive we have from DPSA is that we need to identify those positions that we need, and then we get concurrence from DPSA. We have done that process as a department, a very intensive process, where now our minister is about to sign the letter to DPSA so that we continue to fill those positions. And most of those positions are the key positions in the department, including in the NHI. So we hope that we won't be affected that much. And then through indulgence, Chair, I'd like then to invite my colleagues as follows. We will start with the CFO, just to touch on those issues, including the infrastructure projects and specific questions on that. We might also expand on the local procurement. After the CFO, then I will invite Professor Crisp to talk on the NHI and the specific questions that were raised on the NHI. Thanks, Professor Crisp. I know you are still not well, but thank you for joining. And thereafter, I will invite Reverend Morewane to talk deeper on HIV matters, the condoms that were raised. And then in that manner, I will then invite them to come in. Over to you, CFO. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thanks, DG. I think on the questions, there was also a question relating to consultation with regards to the budget cuts. The process that Treasury has followed, of course, we had meetings, they have called meetings. We had a couple of meetings with the officials from Treasury where they indicated a huge budget cut. We have presented back to Treasury the impact that the cut it will have in the health sector in terms of provision of the services. However, at the end, then Treasury, they have informed us of the reductions which we have presented here. So the amount of billion and 440 million and the 205 million, it was actually determined by National Treasury. So therefore, as a health sector, we had to take the budget cuts and consider which items we will need to consider in terms of the budget reductions, while on the other side, we have to ensure that we don't disturb or we don't compromise the service delivery. DG has covered most in terms of the local and the imports. I think what I could say, Che, we can provide the numbers to the committee. We can provide those numbers currently. We don't have them as we present, but we can quickly do those numbers and provide the committee. So in those ones, more especially, you'll see in terms of packaging and the distribution of the items which DG has indicated, which is medicine and medical supplies and medical equipments. Those ones that they are happening within the country in terms of how much we spend on the local companies. But also just looking on a high level on the budget for this department, when you also talking about the high items, because our budget is sitting on around 242 billion. So out of that, you will have about 52%, which is 151 billion, being allocated to COE, which is the compensation of employees. And hence, when we had the wage bill or the wage bill agreement, the impact to the health sector was almost 8.7 billion in terms of the impact or the shortfall that we will have. And within our goods and services, more especially when the items that DG has already indicated, so I'm not going to repeat, which is medicine, medical supplies, and so on. So the spending on our medicine as a sector is around 20 billion, and also on medical supplies is around 10 billion, and also in the capital expenditure, that's where we're having some of the maintenance and the construction of new buildings. It's sitting around 11 billion, which it includes the conditional grants and the awarded funds from the provinces. Teacher, I think I have covered, I think the other ones will provide, but in terms of the big numbers, it's those that Chair have already indicated, the COE, it will be our medicine and the medical equipments, DG has already indicated. So most of those medical equipments, they are not manufactured within the country, including the medicine. But then we could provide the numbers. I'm just checking in terms of the other questions. I think the HIV and AIDS related, they will be answered. Thanks, DG.
Prof?
Yeah, good afternoon and thank you, DG. Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, honorable members. And thank you very much for the opportunity to contribute to this discussion. It's a big date for us tomorrow and for you tomorrow because the National Health Insurance Bill will go to the debate in the NCOP and you'll be participating in that debate. We've had a select committee meeting this morning for the last mandate from the ninth of the provinces. So it is very topical. There's a lot of hype in the media because it is on at number 99 at the moment. So it's opportune to just try and explain, first of all, about the people to run the NHI and what we envisage. So at the moment, as the DG explained, we are a branch in the National Department of Health. We're a small branch. We have at the moment more or less 50 people. Some of the skills are different from the skills that one has had in the department before because the nature of the functions of the fund are different, and we are busy preparing for the transition once the bill is enacted. So we, as DG said, have been given permission to fill posts, and they're prioritized posts that are funded for the National Health Insurance branch. It will take us up to about 70 or 80 people in this branch. So what we need to remember is that the National Department of Health will not be running the National Health Insurance. The bill establishes a Schedule 3A public entity. So when that clause is proclaimed, that will mean the president believes that we are ready to implement that entity. There's a long transitional process to get there that is provided for in Section 57 of the bill, and I'm sure it'll come up tomorrow. That transitional provision allows a three-year period, starting now in 2023, where we've already been doing some work and for which we have a budget, through the next 2 years to allow us to put in place the administrative structures. Now, if one imagines that there are medical scheme administrators that have more than 3,000 employees, and there are several of these administrators, you can clearly see that right now, as a country, we would not be able to run the National Health Insurance. Having said that, National Health Insurance is very much simpler than 71 medical schemes plus 9 provinces with 308 different options that we can choose from where there needs to be quite complicated administration. We're talking about one set of options or benefits or one option that will cover all of us. So it's a much easier environment to manage. But clearly there's a need for a transitional period and a setting up period, and that will cost some resources. And we know that there's a resource-constrained environment, so we're looking at how best to do that and what kinds of resources would be required. What we do know from the countries that we have spoken to is that we will be able to reduce the cost of administration. We believe it's somewhere between 5 and 6% in the public sector at the moment. And we know from the health market inquiry that it's somewhere in the order of 15% in the private sector. People around the world tell us that it's if you are unable to run your administration of your national health insurance under 3%, then you are really not doing very well. It should easily be possible to do it under 3%. So going forward, that is what we are modeling, and that is what we expect to happen, that over time, as funds shift from the different funding streams they're in at the moment, and they will need to be done in a phased manner because there are different sets of laws that govern those current fundings and any future funding. As they change and as we are able to shift those funding, once there is a board in place that has the governance authority that is provided for in the bill, once it's an act, then we will be able to start to develop the necessary administration. So, Chair, I think that what is important also to recognize is that the National Health Insurance Bill also places quite a lot of responsibility on the National Department of Health for various other reforms, specifically on the development of district health management officers, which will take over a lot of the functions that are currently provided in provincial head offices, but also to make the big hospitals, initially the central hospitals, there are 10 of them, into more functional, autonomous business units. And my colleagues in the department are already busy with the groundwork and the preparations for these various reforms. Those will still be managed through the departments of health and not through the National Health Insurance Fund. So do we have the capacity in the country is the question. And the answer is yes, very definitely. There is very significant capacity in this country with actuaries, economists, public health medicine specialists, and various administrators in the financial sphere, as well as in fraud and corruption management and so forth. There are many such people who work within the various entities that will transform and become a part of the National Health Insurance in due course. Chair, with your indulgence, I'll say one additional comment to add to what the DG and the CFO have said about medicines. So the National Health Insurance Bill makes a provision for health product procurement. Now, the costs and prices of medicines that you were referring to in your own question, Chair, is huge in the private sector. There are lots of reasons for it. There's a single exit price mechanism that is prescribed in law for the setting of prices in the private sector. But not only that, the private sector has huge logistical challenges because they move small volumes around compared with the public sector. The public sector has been using tender processes for years, and for medicines, more than 1,200 critical medicines are tendered for on a national basis now in the NHI branch. And so those mechanisms are very well entrenched, and the prices are very good. And as we, DG alluded to this already, and we have, sometimes we bang our heads against the providers because but it's to make sure that the cost of healthcare to the public is brought under control, which is our primary responsibility, get more healthcare to more people. Once the national health insurance mechanisms are in place, the fund will be able to accumulate rapidly huge amounts of what we call big data. And that enables us to get a better sense of trends, volume flows, timing of when deliveries are needed, some medicines are seasonal, etc. And using that knowledge, we know from the experiences of the past that we are able to give greater certainty in the market, and as a result of that, we are able to get better prices. Of course, South African companies, as the DG said, do get preferential treatment in our processes, and I believe that that will continue when the new procurement laws come in place. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. The last one to come in is Reverend Morewane on HIV.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you, DG, and the Thanks, Bear, to the members of the Appropriations Committee. I don't want to use the wrong name now. I think, DJ, you covered largely a number of these areas of concern, but just to run quickly through a few of them, that, for an example, in the what the impact of the cuts would be, I mean, they would want to increase the number of the youth zones from a little over 1,800 to over 2,000, so that young people are able to walk into our facilities free from anxiety, free from stigma, free from any fear of being spotted by the older or the parent, you know, who may then start asking what are they doing in those areas. So we'd want to expand them to go beyond 2,000 at least. We'd also want to expand our pickup points for 3 months, multi-month dispensing points through the CCMP program. And that's so that people don't have to struggle to come to facilities every month to come and collect treatment, so that they can then pick up treatment from where they live. And as DG said, in spite of the results of the survey showing that we're doing very well, we note that we still need to put 2 million people on treatment. Now, the major problem is not to put them on treatment. To put them on treatment, yes, it's important, but put them and maintain them on treatment so that at least they can attain viral suppression. So currently, we're sitting at 4.1 million people where we've attained viral suppression, but we need to move much more further beyond that. I think the last one, DG, that I just deal with, it's issues of strengthening our prevention so that those that are still not positive must stay negative. It's about the need for us to invest in condom use, educating people about the need for condom use, but making condoms available. But condom also is a barrier for pregnancy, but also prevention for STIs, because we've seen an increase in the number of STIs when people do not use their condom. But also to continue the pre-exposure prophylaxis for those that may have missed or that may have engaged in approaches that, or they know they're going to indulge in some very unprotected measures. So also availability of the commodities for key populations that come to our facilities. But I think, DG, at the risk of repeating what you've said, let me rather stop here and hand over to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Reverend. Honorable Chair, I hope we covered most of the questions, except to say that the final details that were requested by members, the CFO has committed that we will provide them within the next 2 days to the Secretariat of the Committee, because we did not have them at hand when the members asked. Thank you very much. I will hand back to the Honorable Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, DG. Let me check before we sum up and close from the members. Are there any follow-up issue that you want to raise, members, honorable members? Yes, honorable.
It's a no, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG and the Deputy Minister for having appeared before this committee, and thank for really raising quite critical areas which you, the department, really wanted us to take a very close look at them, in as far as your budget is concerned. And we are happy that you even clarified the issue of EHIV, you know, prevalence, that actually those reports are inaccurate in as far as the report that we have in as far as prevalences of HIV and AIDS in other provinces. Yes, and we are quite encouraged by the fact that the Department of Trade and Industry has, the department has considered to work closely with them in as far as realizing the objective of, you know, fast tracking other aspects of the implementation of the, you know, or the availability of medicine on or and equipment in future. Because looking that there's actually an import of the a number of equipment when it comes to equipment, if we want to move forward, and the fact that the issue of the API is a serious challenge, because it's like we're dealing with a situation where now other countries, wealthy countries, hoarded vaccine because of our capacity, you know, being able to work and produce on a vaccine. And also the work that now the science and innovation has come to realize that it's very important to intensify its work around making sure that now we've got, you know, a very advanced type of approach when it comes to you know, taking our own initiative to come up with a alternative, you know, treatment where it's possible through intensified research. And so that is highly recognized by the committee. Although I didn't get clarity on the issue of the pharmaceutical company. But I think, or like we have indicated, DG, there will be definitely some input around that, and to those other areas which were not have not been intensely, you know, documented during the presentation. We want to appreciate that as a committee, and therefore we really want to appreciate your presence and contribution to the input on adjustment and appropriation bill. So we want to thank all of your team until we meet on another date if you are required to do so. So in the absence of anything further, you are released, DG and the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and honorable members.
Thank you. Mr. Mawane, what is the next item on the agenda?
In the first session, we did not consider and adopt the minutes for the previous sessions. I'm not sure if we'll be doing it now.
Yes, because our meeting ends at 5 o'clock, so we can proceed to the next item on the agenda.
Thank you, Chair. Over to you, Chair, about the adoption. The next item is the consideration of the minutes, the 17th.
Yes, just give me the date then, because I have to go to my document. The minutes of...
Okay, the minutes of the 17th and the 24th.
Sorry?
The 17th and the 24th.
Okay. Honorable members, can we get the mover and the seconder of the minutes of the 17th of November 2023?
Humphrey Memezi.
Honorable Humphrey Memezi moves the minutes, and can I get the seconder?
Matapa.
Honorable Matapa moves the minutes. Can we go to the minutes of the 24th November 2023 and get the mover and the seconder of the minutes?
Sorry, Chairperson.
Sir, is it not 21st?
It's the 21st. It's the 21st, not the 24th.
Yeah.
Or the 21st. Sorry, honorable members. It's the 21st of November.
Yes, Lenzana moves.
Okay, honorable Lenzana moves the minutes. Can I get the seconder?
Humphrey Memezi.
Honorable Humphrey Memezi seconds the minutes. Right. What is the next item? Are there any announcement, or Mr. Mogwane?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. The only announcement that we have is that we are meeting tomorrow at 9 o'clock. We are meeting with the Department of Basic Education to receive a briefing on the 2023 Adjustment Appropriation Bill. We're meeting the department with the four identified provinces. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. So, honorable members, let's meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. So the agenda for today's meeting, it has come to an end. So the meeting is closed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, leadership.
Thank you, Salo.
Thank you.